What Coach K and Roy Williams did for college basketball is probably second to none. When you look at those guys, between the two of them, they have 8 national championships, and Coach K has 6 gold medals. And so they have both been tremendous, not just for the ACC, but for our entire, you know, basketball programs across the country. And so they will be missed. They'll be missed, not just on the court and what they've done, but also just behind the scenes, the thing that they fought for.
Sports Radio FNZ, Kevin Keats is a winner, and Kevin Keats recognizes Coach K and Roy Williams as a winner. Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, we've got more fallout from the John Gruden situation. We've got Hornets preseason reaction, overreaction, whatever you want to call it, in this hour as well. But that was Kevin Keats, NC State head basketball coach for the men's side at ACC tip-off, talking about the retirement of Roy Williams, the retirement tour of Coach K, to go ahead and continue. We're going to recap the ACC tip-off with this man. We're going to talk some college football this weekend. Up around his parts, he is the host of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. He is Joe Ovius. Joe, welcome to the show, buddy.
Nick, Stan, what's up? You guys said you're talking about the Hornets? I thought last night was Bobcat's throwback night.
No need to get into that. We have been neuralized by Tommy Lee Jones.
And Rosario Dawson,
yes. Recollection, Joe.
I'm glad it was Rosario. I don't mind if she wanted to do the pen thing to me. It's all good.
That was pretty much our take as well. If you got to forget something, that's what you'd like to eventually forget. So much of the ACC tip-off this weekend was Coach K's retirement tour, the passing of the torch from Roy to Hubert Davis. I am curious, though. You've witnessed both men for a good amount of time there from your perch in Raleigh. What style of retirement do you prefer? Walking off into the sunset like Roy, or the long way around the block as Coach K?
I mean, my personality is to dip, man. Like, when I'm done, I'm done. I mean, that's me at a party, too. When it's time to get out of there, I'm going to get out of there. So I kind of, the Roy Williams, I'm done, fits his personality to a T. The way he decided to go out made a lot of sense for him. The K thing, I get that people are going to have their jokes about the farewell tour, and I know a couple weeks ago he talked about, I don't want to use the word last for anything because he's focused on this particular season. I get his mentality on that. But it's Coach K's trying to do, and what he's trying to build, what he's built Duke into, right? I don't want to go full, like, I don't know, some of your listeners might get this reference. You would certainly get this reference, Nick and Stan. I want to go like full Colin Cowherd on you and make some sort of Apple reference. You know, like, it reminds me a lot of Apple computers. So, but that's what, I mean, there really is no other way to put it when it comes to Duke. Mike Krzyzewski has, you have to look at it in the perspective of how Mike Krzyzewski operates. What's his background? His background is from the military, okay? And there's a succession plan. There's a chain of command. And you go on to the next one, it's all about continuity. But there's another thing that Mike Krzyzewski has done since he's been at Duke over the last 40 years. He's really immersed himself in the Fuqua Business School. He has done a lot of speaking engagements for Fortune 500, a lot of Fortune 500 companies. So all these things kind of help guide him as to what's going to happen next. So he views Duke as this brand that will continue on with the next CEO. In this particular case, it's going to be John Shire. This is why I know Matt Norlander, CBS Sports. I don't know if your listeners have checked this out or if you guys checked this out. But last week they did what they do before every start of college basketball season. It's called the Candid Coaches series, and they get a bunch of anonymous coaches. They ask them a question. They get some pretty interesting responses. And they asked the question, who's going to be better off in the next 5 years? Is it going to be Carolina under Hubert Davis or Duke under John Shire? And 76% of the coaches said Duke, which surprised Norlander. It surprised my co-host, Joe Giglio. But it didn't surprise me because I think the other coaches see what Kay has tried to do. And this is just – and here's the thing about Kay. It also kind of speaks to how his personality is. He told those guys, in the one-and-done business, he told those guys that he was going to be there for this season. So he's going to follow that through. There is no pretense. There is no games. There's no what if. He says, this is it. I told you guys I'd be here for this season. I'm letting everybody know going forward, depending on who's going to sign up for John Shire. what the deal is going to be too. So I commend Kay for the way he's handling this. The jokes are easy, but I get what he's doing.
What can Kevin Keats do, Joe, to close that gap?
Well, if I'm Keats, I don't know, man. If I'm Keats, I might want to go to the SEC right now, you know? States a difficult job, even with Kay and Roy, and it's going to continue to be a difficult job. I'm not saying that the right person can't come in and get it done, but there's just a level of expectations with NC State basketball that are very difficult to meet because there's a lot of people that want to go back to the time of the 70s, the 80s, and even the early 90s. Keats, though, I've always felt, was best suited for what the future of college basketball is going to be based on his background. You know, you're seeing the reason why Hubert Davis is at North Carolina is because Roy was done with, like, the whole – he didn't want to deal with transfers and all that kind of stuff, bringing guys in, losing guys, a roster changeover from time to time. But if you kind of notice where Keats came from, and including UNCW, that's what he was used to. You go back to the junior college town, too, that where the military academy, that's what he's used to. He's dealing with a different roster every season. So Keats, if anything – might actually be able to flourish in this kind of scramble mode with a new roster every season while some other coaches are learning to adapt with it. I mean, NC State's even dealing with a newfound thing of an interconference transfer. They got a guy from Virginia. You think Tony Bennett's kind of used to that right now, where guys have been sticking around for several years? So maybe that's the advantage Keith has at NC State, is that he's already well-versed in the future of college basketball because he's been dealing with it his entire career. Maybe you lean into that.
Joe Ovius, host of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh with Nick and Stan, breaking down and reacting to ACC tip-off earlier this week. By the way, Joe and his partner Joe do have a Roy Williams podcast coming out next week. You guys will be able to check out on WRALsports.com. Joe, moving to the football side of things, this weekend, NC State has Syracuse. What is the concern level up yonder that this could be a stumble game against Syracuse this weekend for the Wolfpack?
Was it? I thought it was BC this week.
Yeah, State is at BC. Clemson at Syracuse tomorrow.
Oh, that is correct. I'm thinking So that actually did mean the Boston College game.
But the thing is, your point stands. Your point stands in that going on the road, when you're in this weird, you're dealing with large teams in the ACC this year, right? This is not a hot take. I think we can all understand State did break through over Clemson. They broke through over a down Clemson team, where every Clemson fan saw that game at Carter-Finley Stadium going, yep, they're going to lose that game. The reason why Doran deserved to have that level of excitement and why State fans were, they absolutely had every right to party the way they did over that win over Clemson is because of all the times they couldn't break through on Clemson, right? So good for State. The question now for the Wolfpack is, who the team you've always pointed to in the Atlantic Division as to why you can't win the division. Now that you've broken through on that team, what do you do next? What kind of team are you? Dave Doran, they do this thing called Wolfpack One. This is their version of a coach's show. It's almost Hard Knocks-like. And they do a really good job of giving you the raw on this show. And they showed a clip of Doran in the locker room after they beat Clemson saying, this week. That is a bold statement, okay? But I like the confidence. I like the hubris, because if you look at your defense and you also look at who you have in terms of skill position players, especially their running backs, and the continued growth of Devin Lee, you look at the other.
We actually are having some issues there with Joe Ovius.
Sounds like he's in a bad spot.
Or it could be us. It could always be our phone line as well. So to you, I got the two games conflated there.
Yeah, no doubt.
When you talk about the NC State Boston College game, how much concern should your average NC State Wolfpack fan have about this game as a potential stumbling block? Because it feels as if right now the Atlantic will come down between Wake Forest, NC State, and Clemson.
Well, if you're NC State, you can't get comfortable, because as Joe Ovies just highlighted, you beat a down Clemson team. I still wonder, do young people or folks that haven't had a whole bunch of those moments, do you still get distracted and get still a little bit hungover off what that was about? And I just point to the record. NC State's got the one conference win against Clemson. But Boston College, without Phil Jakovich, only has one conference loss. So this thing is a little closer, and I haven't looked at the point spread, but perhaps it sounds like we may have Joe back on the line. You want to get
We've got Joe back right here, host of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh, Joe Ovius. Joe, your point was we were so locked into what you were saying. What do you have for us, my guy?
It's called when the Wi-Fi wants to take over my phone and it cuts me off. Anyway, what I was saying about NC State is if you feel you're that, right, you're the best team in the league, as Dave Dorn said, all right, well, then this is where you prove it. You got to go on the road against a well-coached team, Jeff Hapley at Boston College. If your listeners aren't familiar with Hapley, they should start getting familiar with Hapley because he's not going to be at BC for very long. That guy's in position to take a big-time job when it's all said and done. And that's actually the biggest problem that NC State has going forward with the rest of the season. I'm not knocking Dave Dorn. Dave Dorn has proven over the course of time that he has built a nice program at State. But now the question is, can you get over on some difficult spots that have always proven a problem for NC State? Going to BC is definitely one of them against a good coach athlete. But the bigger thing is I'm looking down the line. I'm actually looking at Winston-Salem. I'm looking at Wake Forest with Dave Clawson. Actually, Nick, I'm upset. I'm upset at myself because I thought I was pretty clever. You're out here coming up with hashtag Big Deke Energy.
It's impressive.
I'm mad I didn't come. I am mad I didn't come up with that.
We'll share it. We will share it with you.
I'm going to give you credit. It's all good. So, but that's my thing about Wake Forest and Dave Clawson. I think of the teams in the ACC that are best equipped to take advantage of what we're seeing right now, a bunch of average, who usually is successful? Teams that don't beat themselves. Wake Forest under Dave Clawson is a classic case of a team that does not beat itself. They know what they do. They know what their roles are. They know how to execute. And we talked to Dave Clawson about this last week. Clawson has seen a resilience in this team that's built on what happened last year through the pandemic where they missed a couple of games because of COVID outbreaks or contact tracing. And I asked him, I'm like, look, man, like if you can get past last season and you have a bunch of, you know, the super seniors, a bunch of juniors and seniors, guys who have come back, you got a little bit more depth than what you're used to. And he said, yes, it's something we've talked about. If you could get past last season and come together as a group, being down a touchdown in this league shouldn't be that big of a deal. We've seen this twice now to Wake Forest. Games that usually have been stumbling blocks for them, they've actually powered through and won. So that's going to be a fascinating game for NC State going forward because good teams have gone to Winston-Salem and lost. Phillip Rivers went to Wake Forest, lost. Russell Wilson went to Wake Forest through his first interception there, lost. So I'll be really curious to see how this NC State team handles what will be actual pressure to win the Atlantic Division.
Follow this man on the Twitters right now, at Joe Ovius, and you can, again, check out his interview, or their interview, I should say, with Roy Williams, former UNC head coach on WRALsportsfan.com. Joe, you're a gentleman as always, and I bequeath the ability to have Big Deke energy to you.
May we all have Big Deke energy.
Just say it slow and pronunciate correctly.
Been trying it for years here.
Gotta enunciate.
Been trying to float that out there for years now. Great stuff with Joe Ovius.
Keep employment.
Great stuff there with Joe Ovius there. And we will get back into some of what we just got to with him, but there is more fallout from the John Gruden situation on Sports Radio FNZ.
The reality of that is that Mark Davis really is the one that was dealing with that, okay? And I think he felt like, and I don't want to speak for Mark, there was an awful lot of due diligence that had to go on his side of this, okay? All I knew that is a bombshell had dropped. The players talked about it. We talked about it with the players. John dealt with it. And then, of course, I didn't even know again, Mark was dealing with all the email stuff. We were trying to prepare for a football game. And then when we came out of the game and the rest of it came out, I think Mark was already in the middle of his due diligence. I mean, I think he was trying to figure it all out. And again, I know what the guy stands for, and I think he was trying to do the right thing.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That was Raiders GM Mike Mayock, who, as an avalanche of bleep, was rolling downhill towards Mike Mayock from the John Gruden fallout. John Gruden, Oakland Raiders, or now Las Vegas Raiders, former head coach after resigning, after multiple emails featuring racism, homophobia, misogyny, anti-gay language has come out as part of the Washington football team investigation for their cultural and systemic issues. Mike Mayock thought, you know what I'm going to do in this moment? I'm going to protect Raiders owner Mark Davis. Smart business decision for a guy who could be fired because he was John Gruden's guy. Here's where it really makes him look like a moron, Stan, is he says to the media yesterday, and we heard Derek Carr talk, the Raiders quarterback. We heard Mike Mayock. And so he says he defends Mark Davis in his handling of this situation. Then a ESPN reporter spoke directly to Mark Davis. That we do not have audio of this, but the quote is, "I have no comment. Ask the NFL. They have all the answers."
Did he say it with that tone? And this is what we don't know because we don't have the audio and the full transcript from the line of questioning. It's one thing to say, "I don't know. Ask the NFL. They got all the answers." Versus, "I don't know. Ask the NFL. They have all the answers." I need the tone of it. You see what I did there?
I do understand the tonal thing here. I just can't get over the Raiders GM saying, "Hey, our owner, he's got it locked down. He's in the weeds.
He was on it.
He's in the weeds on this one. All right. He's got it. He's got the best intentions here." And then the owner, seconds later, is quoted as saying, "I got no comment. Ask the NFL. They have all the answers here." This situation, I understand the Raiders' pivot yesterday. It's what Randy Mueller, longtime NFL executive, suggested to us. It was that they have to pivot to, now we got to focus on football.
Who's letting that happen?
Well, that's what Mike Mayock tried to pass.
Has to say that.
Mike Mayock was quoted yesterday in Rich Bisaccia, the new head coach, the interim head coach. Mm-hmm. Both guys said, "Well, listen, we got to get back to the football." I understand why that is the way it is. But Carl Nassib, the only active gay NFL player, asked to take a veteran day to go home to think through everything that had happened here.
And he should be afforded that.
And I'll be honest with you, I don't think he's the only one that should have been afforded. I don't know. I think everybody on that team, they should have looked at all 53 guys, guys on the practice squad, and said, "Listen, guys, we're going to go out there. Whoever's out there, we're going to go get ready for this game this Sunday. However, you don't have to be out
there." Yeah, I look at it as in a team concept, as intimate as the confines of an NFL locker room are, it should have been all or nothing. We're either all practicing we're not.
That's fair.
I understand why you would want to put it, but it just gets too convoluted. We're all doing it or we're all not doing it. Let me just say this. As an African-American man, and I said this when Gruden was in the thick of it, it would have been difficult for me to get back in front of him and go play for that man. Mm-hmm. Now, I get it. He's just the representative of what is the organization run by Mark Davis. As we know, Mark Davis didn't send any of these emails. He wasn't aware of any of this at the time that this stuff was happening. Or he knew and still chose to employ John Gruden. Mm-hmm. That's why others like D. Maurice Smith of the NFL Players Association is imploring that the league release the rest of the emails, because some believe we need to take a closer look, as if the beliefs based on what was communicated by John Gruden, is this impacting what the NFL says is a mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion on multiple levels? You've got men and women in position of power, in this case, man John Gruden. If this is what he believes, who else is connected to this that's impacting how the league looks, feels, and sounds moving forward? So that's where my head is now. Damn what takes place on the field at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas.
Well, and Raiders quarterback Derek Carr said as much. He said, "Open up all NFL team correspondence.
All 650,000.
He was talking about just open it all.
Email transparent. Well, I'm not all the way there. I think that's a little bit aggressive.
Well,
but in this investigation, open up all 6,000.
But I can understand how the John Gruden emails, right? And it's been so interesting to hear the response of people in the league who've worked around the league. And there have been a few people bold enough to say, "Guys, this probably isn't the last you've heard of something like this. This is not the anomaly," right?
I told you yesterday, I've been paid by three NFL organizations on a lower level, if you will. Certainly not at John Gruden's level, Mike Mayock's level, and up. I've heard this language. Yeah. These sentiments are shared in every locker room organization I've been around in some capacity or another.
And I think, you know, whether it is the racism part, whether it is the misogyny part, whether it is the homophobic part, anti-gay part, I do think it's all fair. You have a openly gay player. There are closeted gay players in the NFL right now.
Yes, this is the
statistics say that it is impossible that Carl Nassib is the only gay man in the NFL. You have a league where you do have a female owner. You have multiple females as part of your ownership groups in the case of the Cleveland Browns and the Buffalo Bills and, I believe, the Tennessee Titans.
Female officials.
So, female officials. Great point. So, I just think you're to the point here where the players absolutely are the interesting side of this now, because I don't blame any black player, any closeted or openly gay player. I don't blame any female referee or female executive for saying, well, hold the friggin' phone here, right? This is a league that is more black than it is not, right? This is a league where there is representation for all the parties that were wronged here. Let's bring it all out to the open, because you know why you got to feel that way if you are any of those groups that are affected by this directly. It's because John Gruden didn't get hired because he was the best guy for the Las Vegas Raiders. He got hired because Mark Davis's dad, Al Davis, hired him 20 years ago, and Gruden and Davis are family. The culture, the cultural issues of football, and by the way, it's the cultural issues of pro sports. The real problems, the last vestiges of the good old boy network, they are still deeply entrenched.
And what all of this stuff, I keep using the term connective tissue. Nick, they're going, and that's why other teams, so let's use our local team. Under no circumstances can I foresee David Tepper being told, you are to release all of the emails from your organization, the database, the cloud, whatever, between here and here. There's no way David Tepper's going to be like, first of all, I don't have anything to do with the team up until this point. Number two, we've already done some self-evaluation in the transfer of power from Jerry Richardson to now David Tepper. We've already taken care of our business. Thirdly, unless there are some implications, and that's where I come back to, of the 650,000, let's start connecting the dots to who's in there. And should, I'm not saying is, should something be relevant to the Carolina Panthers, okay, then open it up. But just to open it up blindly, all 32, knowing that some of them may not even be implicated in these emails, I'm not for that. That just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't think it will happen, but I understand if you are any player in the NFL that that's the extent you want to go.
But as players in the league, you already know some of that is going on.
But I think this feels, I'm projecting. Mm-hmm. If I'm a player, whether I am a black player, white player, or Hispanic descent, or any, however I am in relation to the racist, homophobic, anti-gay, misogynistic email sent by John Gruden, this does feel like the one moment to get it all out in the open. I don't know. Like, if you really want to change the culture of the NFL, if Roger Goodell and DeMaurice Smith and the players, I would doubt the owners really want to change it that much. But if key figures want to change it, this is the moment to do it. Because if you allow it to bleed out over the next 5 years or 10 years, or if you never truly deal with it, and if it continues to be this thing in the back of people's minds, at some point, there is collateral damage. At some point,
and I think that's what John Gruden was.
Well, but I think the longer it goes on, the more collateral damage it is. That's the toughest thing in leadership is to deal with the problem the second it happens, and that's where the NFL is. I actually commend DeMaurice Smith for saying, "Let's open up all the Washington football team emails."
They should release the information.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Specifically to that investigation.
And I commend, even though I don't think it's going to happen, I commend any player who says, open up all communications. That makes a lot more sense. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think there's any event that it will happen. But that makes a lot more sense to me than we're just going to go ahead and let John Gruden take the blame for this, and then we're going to move on as a league. That, to me, that is not only... That's taking a backward step on the progress that should be caused by these emails coming out and light being shed on some toxic culture problems in the NFL.
I'm glad you brought up the term toxic culture. I saw a statement. I put it on the DMs for us to see as a show. ESPN, one of the major partners, I would say the biggest partner for the NFL. This thing with Adam Schefter sending, and I don't know if you saw Schefter's response, but essentially Adam Schefter sent what was going to be an article he was going to write, a piece on something pertaining to the Washington football team, and asked Bruce Allen, I believe it was, is there anything in here that you take issue with? Schefter released a statement yesterday, I believe, that said, hey, it's not uncommon in our business to ask, are you going to make, you know, do you agree with all this? Here's what I'm going to put, do you agree with all this? Schefter said, the error that I made was sending him the document in totality. I should have just given him the excerpts as it pertains to him. Are these facts or are they not? I say that to say, Nick, if we start digging deep enough here, there are going to be some things that make a lot of powerful, influential, and wealthy people, the majority of them white, uncomfortable. I don't think there's a world that Roger Goodell, and representing the 32 owners, if you will, giving Green Bay's public status, I don't think there's a world where they let all of that out. These are people in scenarios, they are hell-bent, and they are tactical about keeping some of this stuff put away.
I would agree. I think some of those people are billionaires. I think some of those people are very high up TV executives, and entertainment executives.
And their money leads to other money. David Tepper's connected to the hedge fund game, connected to Wall Street, connected to the government, connected to mega corporations, Coca-Cola and beyond. Like, this thing could go as far as you're prepared for it to go.
I think the other thing that the Schefter tweet really points out is just how incestuous and complicated the relationship between these networks and these leagues are. Because I don't think ESPN has handled this story. If this was about Major League Baseball, Major League Baseball does not have the relationship with ESPN that the NFL does.
You're going that route. Okay.
If this was about, if this was Major League Baseball, the coverage would be a little bit more intense.
If this were a player.
If this was a player.
The coverage that Ray Rice got, and I'm not trying to open that, I'm just saying, using that as an example. Fair. We know how ferociously that coverage was.
Well, symptomatic. It's the reason why the ESPN coverage has been focused on John Gruden and not focused
and
on the
Washington
football
team. And why they want to get back to football.
That is the latest fallout from the John Gruden situation. We'll have more on that as the show goes on, but we've also got to get into Hornets Panic on Sports Radio FNZ.
Well, we'll see how we respond from this. You know, these aren't the efforts we want. You know, that's not what we're looking for. So we'll address it. It's not something we're comfortable with. You know, our efforts got to be better, and it starts with me. And I've got to hold this group accountable. They got to be better. We got to be better collectively. We own it. We move forward.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That is Hornets head coach James Borrego last night when he was asked, how alarming is it to come out and play flat twice in two or in half of your preseason games there after the Hornets got a shellacking 127-59.
Both of those games at home, too.
God bless James Borrego. I don't know what he could have said that would have satiated the bloodlust of Hornets fans after that bleep kicking on national television last night, preseason game or not.
I was very curious up until we heard from him post-game, how would he sound? Would he just say, hey, you know, we're going to flush this and we're going to listen to Jalen Hurts and we're not going to look back and we're going to keep on moving? Or does he look at this one and go, no, we're going to watch the tape because I want this to be ingrained and burned into the psyche of what we do moving forward, meaning so this never happens again. He leaned more the former than the latter. He used terms like, you know, I was uncomfortable with our effort and accountability tonight. We need to be better on both ends of the floor. He also reminded us, it is the preseason. We were shorthanded. You know, these games don't count. We got to work through some things. The last part for me, he was adamant. He reminded us in the media last night many times. Practice is on Friday. We play on Wednesday night. I think they're about to have a hellacious practice on Friday.
I can deal with any manner of struggles in the NBA in the regular season. right? Shooting concerns, depending on how you're constructed. That's something we talked about.
Yeah, you go through slumps.
I realize we're going to have to be patient with these young bigs behind Mason Plumlee. I'm willing to do that. I know it's not always going to look pretty. But where it will become a concern is if within the first 10, 15 games, if we're ever talking about effort, it's just the one thing. Unless you are the Lakers, three superstars, the Nets, multiple superstars, right? Unless you are a super team, you don't have the luxury or the benefit. I mean, even the Heat with Lowry and Butler and Bam Adebayo, you don't have the luxury to take nights off in the NBA. You get beat because you can't shoot. I can deal with that. You can get better at shooting. You can add shooting, yeah. Right? You get beat on the boards. Well, it's going to be concerning, but over time, young players can develop and get better. But if you can't try, that's the basic thing here. And the one reason why my hair isn't on fire about this preseason is we still haven't seen all of your starters playing all at once in consecutive games. So we haven't seen Gordon, Plumlee, Bridges, Rozier, and LaMelo play together.
Yeah, we saw Gordon against OKC the first night. We haven't seen him since. Yeah.
So we haven't seen guys learning to play off the bench together. But I do think this begs an interesting question, Stan. Because I've been on board with you play a lot of road games early, and you are working in some young guys, some brand spanking new young kids like James Bouknight and Kai Jones into your rotation. I've been on the maybe early on we should pump our brakes and understand that there's going to be some learning curve here. Is it for you? Are you allowing the preseason to temper your early season expectations?
Yes. Yeah. And I look at how the schedule lines up. In the first 2, 4, 6 games, they are at home. In the first 7 games, they're at home 3 times. Opening night versus Indy, October 25th, Boston, Halloween night, if you will, versus Portland. The other 4, at Cleveland, at Brooklyn, at Orlando, at Miami. Stan, what's your point? You're having trouble scoring at home in the preseason. There's not a new rim they're going to put up there. Granted, the roster looks different. I'll get to that momentarily. But then look, there's a West Coast trip right behind those 7 games. Teams like Golden State, the Clippers, the Lakers. There's that Memphis team that beat you in the preseason by 30. Memphis isn't going to forget that. James Borrego very vocal about the style. Memphis plays a very physical style, and they still have Steven Adams and Jaren Jackson Jr. That isn't going to change. So I look at this Hornets team and go, it's critical to get out the gate as fast as possible because we know as we approach the playoffs, veteran teams start doing veteran things. Last part, coming back to you. This team hasn't been on the floor together. What's the continuity going to be like? Plumlee's a new piece. LaMelo is now the fixture as a starter. We hadn't seen Gordon in a while. These are things that concern me about the start of this season.
I think it's fair to have concerns. I need to see them on the court together against Indiana before I just put too much into it. I think, so for instance, you mentioned the shooting. I haven't really seen any of these guys in a meaningful game play off LaMelo Ball. Well, even James Bouknight coming off the bench. I haven't really seen Gordon and PJ together alongside Terry. So that's going to be one of your better shooting lineups. I think it's fair to look at the preseason and say, did they get the most out of it? And it's fair to say they did not. Maybe they haven't practiced, but on the court, they have not given the kind of interest you are going to need them to early on. But I'll continue to go back to it. I'm not concerned early on because of preseason. The only concern that I would have out of the preseason is you didn't give a bleep. You barely showed up at home in the preseason. But I think there should be a natural, the first 10 games of this season, of which you are on the road a lot. You pointed that out. I think we should have a little bit of a, I think we should be realistic early on. They might lose a couple games because James Borrego doesn't know who he can trust as the backup big behind PJ and Mason. There might be a couple games where trying to get the rotation of Bouknight and Ish Smith and McDaniels and Martin, trying to get the bench right. There might be some of those games, but this is where I put it all, or I put a lot of it on Terry, PJ, Miles, Kelly Oubre, even Ish, though I know he's new. Gordon, I put it on the veterans and say, you've got to let these kids, you've got to lead them to show them how to win. And that starts with effort, but that goes with playing within yourself and playing as a team as well and not making stupid mistakes. I think we're going to have some humble pie here early in the season. I think that's probably natural. But if it's not going to happen, it's on these vets. You've got six or seven guys in your rotation who've played 2, 3, 4, 5 years in the NBA.
Four of the first 13 on the road to start the year. Coming off of, and we know that hopefully there's no swelling and there's no reaction, no further damage to Miles Bridges, who played in just, 11 minutes last night. P.J. Washington has a finger. He didn't play much more than that. That's on top of, we still don't definitively know what's going on with Gordon. Mason Plumlee did play a little bit more than the other starters last night. But even with a now out of protocol Mason Plumlee, we still don't know that that's going to be enough. I think the center position got better, but I still don't know that it's going to be enough. And yes, when Terry Rozier is healthy, and there are some beliefs, I don't want to say reports, there are some beliefs in that building that we may not see Terry opening night. Like this thing, and let's see how he responds to treatment. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. But there's a world where, quite frankly, Nick, we asked about the Carolina Panthers, the New York Jet game, week one.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of an extension of the preseason? I'm preparing myself for that with the Charlotte Hornets. That those first, 13 games, some of that's going to be preseason.
I think that's rough because you start up against the team in Indiana. You start at home against Indiana, a team that you the last time we saw the court, saw them on the court against the Hornets.
It got ugly.
They got dusted. Yeah. They being the Hornets, they
got
dusted.
And then you got Brooklyn 2 games after that.
But I think the injuries are the biggest concern of all. The fact that you've already, it was 4 preseason games and Terry's been touched by it. Gordon has not played since OKC. PJ, Miles in this last game. That's the much bigger
Kelly
concern.
Kelly Oubre Jr.
Cause
with
those,
that ankle, yeah.
Because those are the guys that you're going to have to lean on. And so, again, I don't want to overreact to the preseason. I turned it off at halftime last night because it just wasn't their night. They weren't trying, and they had pulled guys off the court.
There were points that they did try, Nick, and the ball it's like the offense, they weren't making shots. I wrote this down. Give me just 1 second. I'm sorry. Air ball by Book Knight. Missed layups and alley-oops. Mason Plumlee takes the ball off the rim in the third quarter, leads the break, gets down there to the rim on the other end, charge. Let's go the other way. Kai Jones catches the ball on the wing, steps out of bounds on the sideline. The decision-making by Ishmith and others, getting into the painted area and just being non-committal about what to do with the basketball. I don't think it was ever as much as was guys are just out of sync. And guys just didn't know, who's going to get us out of this funk?
I also think you weren't playing with most of your starters, and most of these guys haven't played
together. I will take that into consideration.
Yeah. I think that's, I don't know. So we'll throw this out to you guys, 704-570-9610. The question for you guys is, how much stock are you putting into the preseason issues of the Charlotte Hornets, of which that is the young big men struggling? That is shooting
everybody
issues.
Shooting. Yeah.
That is everybody shooting. That is effort. That is injuries.
Rebounding was something we talked a lot about.
I'll put a little bit more stock into injuries and into effort. I was already cautious about the beginning slate of this season as it is. Mm-hmm. But I think you got to figure out those first 10 games. Because that's about what you get spotted in the NBA. There is some point where, and you talked about it, where you need to make your hay before every team in the NBA starts
making
trying
that push
in about mid-February. And you need to be prepared to start using February as your kind of jump-off point for a playoff push.
Sam Farber reminded us, obviously you hear Sam Farber here for pregame, obviously voice of the Hornets for Sports Radio FNZ and as well as postgame for the Hornets. He reminded us the 2 teams in the finals last year, Suns and Bucks, combined to go 0-7. In last year's preseason. I would combat that by saying I respect Sam. He knows we have a great relationship. I enjoy working with him.
All due respect, bud.
All due respect. Those rosters look more trustworthy than this roster. So I still maintain some concern.
Are you tempering your early season expectations for the Charlotte Hornets, given these what has been the preseason? Former Viking Ben Lieber joins us next to give us the skinny on the Minnesota Vikings ahead of the Panthers-Vikings game next on Sports Radio FNZ.